right, now we are recording. So welcome, everybody, to the latest in a series of telecoms that DUP North America is putting on with senior mentors of the region. I'm Sky Majida-Roche in Arizona, and I am absolutely delighted to be interviewing Anahata Arata today on the subject of art, the artistry of dance leading and dance circles. And so to start us together and to get us all attuned, Anahata and I are going to say the invocation. And please say it with us or breathe it as you hear us saying it. Shall we begin?
Yes. Toward the one, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the spirit of guidance.
As was stated in the invitation, Anahata is a senior mentor in the Leaders Guild for the Dances of Universal Peace, a gifted musician and composer, a film producer, and a Buddhist practitioner who has combined the Dances of Universal Peace and Buddhist meditation techniques and teachings. Would you want to add anything about your background at this point?
No, I think the only really important thing to add is how much I love my cats. This has a very central role in my life as well.
Yes.
No, I think that says the important things that have really been influencing my life.
I'm understanding that again. Oh, blessings on you and your cats.
Thank you.
As we were beginning to pull the idea of this call together, Anahata told me that for her, each dance is a precious doorway that opens into something deeper, to penetrate the illusion, to be transformed, and that she really has an interest in going beyond assumptions and formulas to touch something real and penetrating. And there are probably many ways to try to accomplish that, but for me it seems that as a leader or even as a member of a dance circle, to do that gracefully would be a component of artistry. And so, Anahata, what is artistry in the context of the dances or participating in a circle, and why is it such an important topic?
Now I really, really have to think about this. So, first of all, I think what we have to do is to separate out the domain of skills. And skills are very, very important and can certainly contribute vastly to the artistry of dance leading. For example, if you are an accomplished musician, you can definitely use the music as a transformative power. If you have a beautiful voice, a magnetic voice, you can use the magnetism of your voice also to transform. But really, the key for me about the artistry of dance leading is something much larger than a skill set, because you have to have the ability, through the art of dance leading, to touch the source. And something that I was thinking about in the days leading up to this interview was that the dances have one thing going for them that is absolutely marvelous. Each dance, as you already mentioned, is like a portal to the divine. A good dance will reveal an essence that, if you are able to touch it and abide there long enough, you are forever changed. I mentioned to you in one of my sort of preambles when we were discussing this that I had come across a beautiful sacred phrase called Eadem Mutatu Risergo, which means I am forever changed. I touch the source, and I look the same on the outside, but I am forever changed by this touching. And I think that this is a very important point, because the dances allow us to go there actually with relative ease. We often talk about it, that we can get to a place of essence very, very quickly with a skilled leader and with a very good dance. But I would say the challenge of the dances is how to maintain that when the dance is over. So we have this incredible window into the divine. But perhaps what the dances don't exactly do quite as well as the dances themselves is that when we come out, the challenge is how to integrate that touching, that vibratory pulsing, if you will, of touching this sacred essence. How do we integrate it, and how do we live from that place moment by moment? And I think that the goal of every human life is to close the gaps between the awareness and then the unawareness that sort of usually resumes after some time of re-entering everyday life. And our job is to close the gaps. And how wonderful that the dances in our day and age, in our lifetime, have been given to us as this incredible way of being able to, in a certain sense, to accelerate our path. So in one way, even though I imagine many people would think that I would say that the artistry of dance leading is a combination of the skills that we have, our different abilities, both latent and developed, in one way, the artistry is really about how do we take people to the essence, and then how do we, through the very cells of our being, indicate to people that it's the gaps between the dances where the great transformational work will be done. And so that's really what I mean by artistry. It's that ability to understand that when we lead, that's just the beginning of our job. That's just the entry point. But when we come out of the dance, it's like, you know, we often say that the great musicians know how to play the silence, not the sound. And it's very much the same with the dance leader. It's one thing to be able to give people a very, very wonderful and deep and profound experience. And then the art is in how to sustain that beyond the duration of the dance into whatever the setting is, if it's a weekly dance meeting or if it's a retreat, and then, of course, ultimately out into the world without any gaps of awareness. So that's sort of where I'm going with this sort of flow of thinking about the art of dance leading. And actually, I'd like to say right now that where this began, because I had offered to talk about music, and you said, no, that's already been done, and there were a couple of topics, and then I heard a beautiful BBC radio broadcast, and I heard this quote of Paul Robeson, and it said, artists are the gatekeepers of truth. And I thought, that's it. That's it. Inasmuch as we, as dance leaders, we are the gatekeepers of truth. We have this great opportunity to guide people into the center of their soul, into the essence of themselves. And so that's where the idea of the artistry of dance leading came from, was from this statement, artists are the gatekeepers of truth. And I thought, that's it. We are artists. We may not have thought of it in that way exactly, but I think that's what we are. We are there as a witness of something that transcends, something that endures beyond all of these ever sort of changing circumstances of our life, which, you know, sometimes things are good, sometimes things are not so good, but we have the ability to go beyond the change and to enter the formless realms And that is an art.
Yes. I've always felt that, for instance, a dance, a single dance, starts being brought into being the moment the leader steps into the center. It's not when they start teaching, it's the moment that that focus gets brought into the center, and that it never really ends. The dance ends, and then there's a silence, and I prefer personally to keep that silence going for a while, because there's so much, there's such a richness in that place of stillness, you know, after that connection has been made, after we've dropped in.
Yeah.
And yet that, in a way, that stillness just continues to, even though stillnesses don't reverberate, it seems like it continues to reverberate through the next dance, through the whole evening, you know, through just continuously forever.
Yes, yes, yes. And anything that isn't that stands apart to be examined. And that's also another way of putting it, because it's sort of like, the background things are also going on, and when something grabs us that isn't of the nature of love, that isn't of the nature of joy and equanimity, then we have a chance, and we have cultivated some meditative absorption to be able to really look at the habitual patterns that inevitably are going to arise. They're going to arise until they're purified. There's no way of not saying, that they're never going to come up again. They're going to keep coming until we're able to penetrate them ultimately and not just relatively. But how beautiful that we have this culture of peace whereby we can gather momentum enough that whatever is happening in our lives, we can temporarily set aside all of our daily concerns and have this beauty surrounds us that gives us this cushion whereby we can go back into our ordinary lives and live, hopefully, from a different place, at least accumulatively throughout our lives.
Yes, I've always felt that one of the reasons I really like the dances is because being in that space while I'm moving, while I'm either speaking or singing words, while I'm connecting with other people in the circle and with the divine at the same time, it's like practice on how to continue moving through life from that space. It's not just sitting on a cushion. It's using all of this while I'm actually engaged in something that is sort of like being in life itself. You know what I mean?
Yes, I know what you mean, but it's very interesting that you should say this, because I had no idea that this particular aspect would arise. But there was once a time when I was in a meditation retreat, and somebody close to me said to my meditation teacher, Shinzin, "I like to dance my prayers."
Yeah.
And he said, "Okay, that's great, that's wonderful, but can you also sit?" And my friend said, "No, I like to dance my prayers. That's how I get to the places I need to get to." And he said, "Be really careful, because if you can't also sit through whatever it is that needs to be purified, there may be residual effects that you're actually not getting to."
Right.
And I thought, how interesting, because it just gave it made the picture a little more full for me, because I think that you need both. Like Murshid Sam says, if you meditate, you can dance better, and if you dance, you can meditate better. They influence each other. But it is a slight warning for me that the practices need to be integrated. And there's this, you know, age-old question that I know arose right from the beginning, you know, when I started my work with Tasneem and Sadi, when they said, are the dancers of universal peace a path unto themselves? Well, I know that there's at least one person here, Haira Fatah, who's like an emissary of this being, you know, true. And I believe it can be. But I also think that we have to have that time where we cultivate our practices in the stillness as well. Because sometimes, you know, there can be subtle, very subtle avoidances of doing things in other ways because, you know, stuff comes up. I mean, we all know what it's like to sit. You know, one sitting session, you're in, you know, you're in heaven, and you think, great, I've arrived. And the next one, you can't sit still for anything, and the thoughts come, and that's just another layer of the impurities having to come through to be felt through, to be fully digested and complete. And so I'm really glad that you brought that up because I think it's a very important consideration how we bring balance to our spiritual life.
Yes, I'm thinking about that. And like at the end of a dance, you know, avoidance techniques are things like, oh, well, I think I'm hot. I need to take my sweater off. Or, oh, I need to go get some water now.
Yes.
Instead of just being able to stand there with whatever came up.
Yes, exactly. And thank you, because that's another really important point that, again, I hadn't really thought about ahead of time. But, you know, again, my teacher Shinzin once said something that changed the course of my meditative life. He said, you know, it's really great. You know, the going is really good when loving kindness, compassion and joy are flowing, you know, at the Brahma Viharas of the Four Immeasurables, then you just coast on them. But he said there will be times when even an advanced practitioner isn't capable of generating those wonderful qualities of love and compassion and joy, but everyone is always capable of cultivating equanimity in any given moment. So I like what you said, because at the end of a dance, who knows what has been provoked? And so I think one of the arts of dance leading actually is helping the circle, helping other leaders, and helping ourselves to know how to abide in equanimity when very deep things are stirring, so that we can feel them fully in the moment, completing them and digesting them inside our body-mind process, and on the outside everything is still and calm. And I think that's a very important thing, because it gives people the tools not to have to rush off and get a drink of water or take their sweater off.
Yeah.
So thank you. I really appreciate what you said, because I think that's really a part of the artistry, and I think that's part of the magnetism of when people want to come back, is not just for the bliss and joy, not just for the safety of being around like-minded people, but people want to go where they feel real. And I think that's, for me, the most important thing is authenticity. And I really did want to say that if a leader doesn't have a great voice, has no musical skills, knows very few dances, and even if they forget the melody or the movements, if they are real, the people will have an experience, an authentic experience, and that is art. And that's really one of the points I wanted to say, that it isn't, as I said right at the beginning, the skill set is tremendously important because it helps us to get to these places. But much more important is authenticity, of being where you are at any given moment and just being that with the people in the circle and allowing them to be the same.
Yes, and I think that's why mentors will say, you don't teach the dance by talking about it. You teach it by embodying it.
Yes, of course. Yes, yes.
Because
yes,
if you
by
are
embodying
being that,
the teachings.
It
yes.
creates a space and gives permission for every dancer in the circle to do that as well.
Right, right, indeed. And of course, that's another really important point because, I mean, almost every dance, not all of them, because we have lighthearted and sort of, you know, more frivolous, joyful dances that also have their place to gather energy and so on. But the very deep dances, each one of them has teachings that many of them are ultimate teachings. They can take you all the way to, you know, full enlightenment. So, yes, how important it is to embody the essence of the teachings. And maybe when people are preparing for their dances, they should start with the preparation of the essence first and work backwards to the movements.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing about that is that when you begin to engage in the essence of a dance, you'll often start to say, no, I don't want to do certain dances anymore because the movements are not married to the essence.
Yeah,
it's really, really interesting because the more you really understand the transformative power of moving, or like you said earlier, of moving your dances, of dancing, of fully embodying them, the more that reveals to you what real authentic movement is as well. And, of course, Sadi was a master in helping people to see that, yes, you've just copied this set of movements from X, Y, and Z dances and, you know, like, go back inside and find out what, not necessarily original. It's not that we want to have choreography that has to be different, but just that the movements themselves come out of the pulse of the words which are encoded in the sacred phrase itself. So the more we practice this, the more we know when dances themselves are authentic, when they are really transporting you to the place that the words are pointing to. So I think this is going to become even more of an issue as all of these developing countries that are producing dance leaders and new dances, it's going to push us even further into the nature of our body, you know, in our beautiful studies of Ruth St. Denis, where she gives us permission to see our bodies as a sacred temple. What movements can come through this temple that still embody the words but still are, you know, true to that particular dance rather than just borrowing from a vocabulary of movements that everybody knows. So this is one of the challenges as well that can lead to a very authentic experience.
And so I have to ask at this point, since you do so much work in Brazil, what do you see coming up? That's a totally different culture from, you know, the Western European culture. What do you see there that's an artistry that maybe is different from what we do here?
Oh, boy, that's a fabulous question. You didn't warn me about this one, but it's a great question because when I first went to Brazil, within 10 seconds, I thought, oh, boy, we're in a fire culture, right? Lots of fire, red, heat, energy, life, passion. And it took me 10 minutes to realize that it's deeply embodied and grounded. So for me, Brazil is a fire earth country. And, you know, it's like they listen so attentively. They get every dance immediately. I almost never have to repeat a sacred phrase in any language. Somehow they are used to listening. And very similar to the Russians, you know, when their lives have been very hard until the last 5 years when the economic growth is starting to happen. So they're used to working really hard. They're used to being really patient. So standing, waiting, all of the qualities that we love and that we have to cultivate in the dances, for me, are there immediately. So, you know, it's true that afterwards everybody likes to make a lot of noise. But the interesting thing is, if I say, okay, ready, they will be ready, as Americans would say, on a dime. You know, they're like totally able to do an about turn and become very concentrated and aware. So it's been really interesting how easy it is for me to teach there, even in a second language. And then the other thing that's really beautiful and not nearly as important, but it's like every movement where we might just go to the right, they kind of go right, left, right, and they put in these undulations of movement that turn even the most simple dance into this feast of activity. It is just gorgeous, and I'm really hoping, you know, before I leave this earth, that I get to sort of like have this English body become a little bit more Brazilian. I don't think there's too much hope, but I like writing music for them because I know how it's going to look when they dance the dances that I create with them in mind. So it's really very, very nice. I love the way they listen and move, and they're also very, very respectful. And I would say that I have almost never had a disrespectful moment in Brazil. Culturally, yes, maybe sometimes they do things that I don't quite understand, but never with the intention of being disruptive or anything like that. So it's been very powerful. It's been a great gift to me to have this. I'm coming up on my 10th year. Next year is my very last dance training that I'm going to give, and it's year 10 of 10 years.
Oh, my.
So now I've got a bunch of people that are more than equipped to go out there and do the necessary things.
Oh, there's such a wonderful tangent I would love to go off on there, but...
welcome.
We can stick more to the topic for this conversation. And I want to say that one of the questions I'd had was, as far as this topic of creating artistry, one of the questions was, how might a dancer or the circle as a whole contribute to that? And it sounds to me like how you just described the Brazilian circles, maybe it part of it, a big part of it?
Yes, could be, yes. Yes, I mean, I think every culture is capable of doing it, but I think there is, for example, something about individualism in America that sometimes people like to be seen. And very often in a circle, there'll be one or two people, you know, like calling attention to themselves. And that's something that I don't ever get in Brazil. They're much more ready to become one circle instead of a group of individual people dancing.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting thing because, you know, the very, very, very poor, and there's a big gap between poor in this country and in Brazil, but the very, very, very poor, the middle classes, and I don't know that I've ever met an upper-class person, but they all know the same songs and they all do the same dances. And it's something that is a cult. It sort of like evens, everybody's equal as soon as the music begins. And, you know, that's really very, very nice as well. And
yeah.
And I think that, you know, I certainly don't mean to be unkind about American circles, but it's just, it takes a little while longer to say, okay, you know, as soon as everything ends, you'll be back to being the individual you were at the beginning, hopefully a little bit changed. By the way, I said the Erdam Mutata Rusurgo, I was a little nervous at the time. It actually means I was resurrected the same but changed. which is beautiful. The word resurrection is fantastic, and it has so many meanings. But, you know, you can say it's okay, let's all just be together now and then resume, hopefully touched and changed by the experience. Afterwards, you can become whoever you want to be. But it's it just takes a little while longer for me to have that happen. Although I have to say that just like many of you, I've now seen some circles over the course of 20 or 25 years, and the maturity here, the depth is just quite phenomenal. I'm really only referring to sort of like new circles in the U.S. if I'm doing something for the first time with people who have never done it before.
Yeah, I was thinking that when I see, sometimes I see things like that in a circle, and what that tells me is that you've got people of various levels of either how much spiritual work they've done,
yep,
how comfortable they are in being able to let go of me, me, me.
Yes, 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 exactly.
To move into that place.
Yes. Yes, I think you're right. I think the fact that I can only speak for Brazil, but I'm imagining the rest of South America as well. There's so much touching and loving and holding that happens. You know, everybody's always bumping into each other and holding each other and, you know, cuddling. And it's just built into every aspect of even of daily life. You know, if a young man walks into the room, he kisses everybody. Doesn't matter who, if he knows them or not. So when you have a 14, 15, 16, 17-year-old young man kissing right from when they were a little boy, of course, they're very comfortable with touching even strangers. And I think a lot of our issues in our circles in you know, maybe the Northern Hemisphere, it's just because we have much less of that very kind of intimate touching. Not, and it's not even sexual. It doesn't have anything to do with that. It has to do with, ooh, I like the way you feel, you know, and that makes the dancing and some of the aspects of how people are shy in our circles. They have to sort of come to terms with looking into the eyes and holding hands and putting arms around each other's backs. That's for some people, as we all know, it's a slight invasion to begin with, and they have to grow into it.
Yeah. And so for a circle or a dancer who wants to be part of the process of developing or sharing artistry, I guess it's helping to hold that space, that more devotionally intimate space.
Yes. Yes, I think that's the real art. That's where the art comes in, and all of the skills feed into that.
Yeah. This is wonderful. And I want to just stop for a moment, because I know you've been sitting with this and thinking about this, and I know there are things you want to share, and maybe I don't want to lead anywhere right now. Maybe I just want to give you a moment to say what else needs to be brought to this conversation.
Huh. Yes, let's think. I think one of the things is that, you know, it's such a blessing to have this methodology, this incredible way that Murshid Sam, you know, came to understand that this is what the tool that humanity could really use very well at this particular time. But I would also say that whatever it is, whether we're talking about dance leading or any other aspect, these are the tools that we have to bring into our everyday life as well. In other words, you know, what has to happen for a dance leader is, okay, take away the circle. Well, you know, does anything change? If it does, then we need to examine, you know, are we dependent on it looking a certain way? And so, yes, it's wonderful, it's magical, it's marvelous, it's this great gift that I consider it to be, you know, the greatest gift I was given in this lifetime. You know, and I'm so aware that Tasneem is there. I mean, Tasneem was my first teacher, and, you know, those feeling sensations when I encountered the dances, they were just, it is like everybody says, it, you know, I've come home.
Yes.
But then later on, you know, we have to be able to say, well, what if we don't have the dances? How are we going to do it? And in one way, nothing should change. Nothing should change because it's the form, and the form is great and it's wonderful. But, you know, what if we didn't have the form? We have to still be able to dance. We have to be able to evoke these qualities. What if we can't speak? What if we're in a place where, for whatever reason, there are no words? We still have to be able to distill these energies and to be able to give the people around us, and that includes ourselves, exactly the same experience. So I guess that's the only thing I would like to add, is to be able to really say, you know, whatever I have learned in the dances, whatever it is I can do in the dances, whatever I feel and whatever others feel, can I do the same if this framework was suddenly taken away from me? And of course, that's it, isn't it? I mean, that's when we have to do that, then we have to moment by moment construct our reality. And oh, I know what it was. Thank you. Now I know. I remember there was something I wanted to share. I'm studying and practicing from a wonderful book called The Diamond Cutter, and in The Diamond Cutter, the essence of the book is imprints. And he, Geshe Michael Roche, has this wonderful way when he says that there is nothing that can come towards you that you yourself have not imprinted. And he says this is how life manifests itself moment by moment, is that the imprints that we have planted is going to be what manifests for us in the future, and that what moves towards us is the same as an imprint that we have already planted. So how beautiful, the dances plant these amazing imprints. How lucky we are. So our job then is to continue those imprints when the dance stops and when the form fades away. So I guess that's what I'd like to say is be careful and be aware that every single imprint is going to manifest in our future stream of becoming. So that's it, and how grateful, how wonderful to have the dances that gives us this sort of sense of time out of time where we are planting the most precious imprints that we are capable as human beings of doing. How beautiful and how precious and how grateful we should be to our teachers for, you know, giving us this opportunity to create our own futures in this way.
Amen.
Amen.
And what I also hear is that in this sense, artistry isn't something you do. It's not a talent. It's not
what?
Like being able to match colors or, you know, being a good artist. It's more about a way of being.
Yes. I think artistry is what you don't do rather than what you do do. I think artistry is the art of unfolding into the divine. And so most of this is about peeling away, not adding on. Because even the skills that we have to add on, we have to get to the point where we're actually not doing it. It's just happening rather than us doing it. That's why sometimes less is more. Because, you know, it takes a while before you have a skill that you can do in a way where you don't feel like you're controlling it, where you're just sort of, it's a just happening quality to it. So sometimes less is more, you know. That's why sometimes it's so beautiful to put down all the instruments. Sometimes it's so perfect to stop the dancing and just stand and sing and then to drop from the singing into stillness, you know.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I created this fabulous dance last year. It's a very joyful dance, but it's with the words of Rabia, and she was asked, how did you find the secret, Rabia? And then she says, I lost all found things in God. So that's the point, you know. How did you find the secret? It's always this active part, right? And she says, but I lost all found things in God. And then her friend says to her, well, how did you come to know God, right? And she says back to him, she says, you know of the how. This is so beautiful, this English. It's unusual English. She says, you know of the how, and I know of the how-less.
Oh, yes.
Isn't that just marvelous? Because, you know, it was her friend Hassan al-Basri, if I'm saying it correctly, who said, and he was the sheikh and everybody came to listen, and if she wasn't there, he'd say, I can't talk because the essence isn't here. And so, you know, he questioned her, how did you find this illumination? Where did you find it? How did you do it? And she said, I did everything going in the counterclockwise direction. I unpeeled the layers to get to the truth. You know of the how, and I know of the how-less.
Yeah.
That's it. I think that's about it, really. And so that's what we have to do, is to turn in the other direction and let go, let go.
Oh, that is so... That is. I'm still breathing it in. It's so profound.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
It is. It's absolutely beautiful.
How did you find the secret, Rabia? I lost all found things in God. Well, how did you come to know God? You know of the how, and I know of the how-less. It's beautiful, beautiful. So when you dance something like this, You're absorbing. It's like, okay, you know, it's that tendency, that habitual tendency to want to acquire more and to know more. But it isn't really ultimately about that. It's a fine balance between study and investigating and, you know, acquiring this skill set of being able to do whatever we need to do well. But unless we have that open space in which everything can unwind and undo, and in that unwinding process it will reveal to you where the knots, where the places are that are stuck, they will automatically come through, and then we just have to, you know, in a certain sense observe them and let nature do the rest. And I think that's the other part, is that the dances are just an expression of nature. And so we want to work with the flow of nature. We want to work with the flow of the body and just let everything soften and unwind. And that's the artistry. That's the artistry when it becomes effortless and we are in the flow.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's interesting in a way because even using words to talk about this doesn't do it. But I know what you're describing. I know that state, but it's not a state that I could just say to somebody, "Oh, here, you just need to do this, this, and this."
Right. Right, 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 right. Yeah.
Oh, we have a few more minutes, and I'm wondering if anybody who's been part of this call has something that they would like to ask or would like to comment on. And if you do, you're going to need to press *6 to bring yourself into the conversation. So is there anybody there who would like to say anything?
This is Amina, and I appreciate this so much, and I feel that flavor, that Tasneem flavor flow through you, who was my first dance leader, and I feel just so moved and grateful. I'm actually kind of working while I'm listening because it's just how I have to be right now, but I feel so moved. What you just expressed was the transmission I received from the dances early on, appreciate it's what I notice about different dance leaders when they're leading, that sense. And I notice in our own community, because we are listed on Meetup, we have this kind of constant flow of newcomers, a few each time. And the difference that feels than when all of a sudden there's the crew that's been doing this for a while. And, that part I really related to, like, who comes in that already comes from a culture of touching, which is one barrier for people, and then are people that already, you know, are steeped in the practice. I noticed that even with the Tara practice that we do, that same kind of thing. It's different when you're with practitioners who've been doing it before. Thus, like when Tasneem was here fairly recently and led a workshop that was, there were a lot of leaders there. And, I mean, not only does she just blow all your fuses about how to be a leader, but that experience of doing the dances in that environment was so profound. And it just reminds me about, as a leader also, to remind those that are familiar with the dance or to, I don't know how to say it, but welcome them also in the way of how much they bring to the dance when they come. For those that are new to the dance, does this make any sense what I'm saying?
Yes, yes, yes.
So I just have a yes body chill. It's just such a thrill. Thank you so much.
Great.
For the depth that you bring. And thus, I think that's why I always love to do those long cycle dances with you, because they go long enough that you really do have a chance to merge in the unity with each other.
Yes, yes.
And you go kind of through a journey because they take you from one place to another all in a row. And so I guess that's the other thing I can say is that's such a gift when a dance circle does that. Kind of consciously, the leader does that kind of consciously in the selection that they have of the dances,
right,
to bring you somewhere through the way the different dances are combined. And that's all I want to say. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's a good point too. You know, we should be really light and gentle with ourselves. I guess there's two small things I'd like to say is that, you know, don't be worried about every dance being super fantastic. It's not about that. You know, of course, when we're practicing, we want to maximize every single dance to do it as well as we can. But actually, what we're trying to do is to give people an overall experience that when they leave, that there is something that has really truly been transformed, as opposed to every dance having to hit a certain place. Just be easy. Just allow the whole thing to unfold and to trust the process as well, because it has its own energy of where it wants to go, independent of where you think it wants to go. And the other thing I want to say is that, again, separating out the skill set, I want to remind us all how absolutely this is something that I'm really strong about, that when somebody is leading the dance, that they sing it at least one time through by themselves, because even if they're not a great singer, and even if they perhaps, you know, have a wrong note here or there, it is their soul coming through. And that soul is the imprint of their authenticity. And that is what is going to transform the dance into something ordinary, into something extraordinary. So allow each other to be where we are and to absolutely celebrate that's what's happening in this moment. Nothing more, nothing less, but that this soul is singing to us in they're singing where they are in that moment. And that, to me, is when I see my students just do that, I'm in heaven. I'm in heaven, you know, and then I know the dance is going to be just fine, because they're revealing who they are, and that's so precious.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we really, for the most part, don't have the opportunity to listen to each other in the way that would be maximum. But if we can do that in the dances when a leader stands up, then we're giving them 100% of our finest quality attention. And I think that's something so beautiful.
Yes.
You know, and it's funny, really. It's like you say, words don't do it. But what is if we'd have had this conversation without words but just melody? We'd have the same energy coming, you know. This is why music is so powerful, because we can often do it without any words at all. That's also another precious thing.
Yes. Sometimes that's the way I prefer to lead.
Uh-huh,
just walk
uh-huh.
in and start singing, and as little talking as possible.
Yeah, yeah. Unless the words are music. See, and then there's that. There's sometimes the moment when the words themselves become music, and it's all one. There's no separation, and so that's also great. So it can be any so many different ways, and that's. Also, is not to anticipate how it's going to be, because it's not going to be the same way ever twice.
Yes.
Each time.
Which actually, to me, is another part of artistry. Artistry isn't a static thing. It's always unfolding as it needs to in the moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like there's this beautiful quote, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh says, you know, people often don't understand what... Buddhists mean by emptiness. He says, if you think of it as being empty of anything solid but filled with the whole universe, and that's how we need to be, you know, it's like empty but full of everything, and that's what we have that opportunity for too.
Yeah.
So each time it's going to be different. Is it going to be full of this or that or the other? And just as much as possible. That's one point about our dances, is say, oh, it doesn't go that way. Well, it's going that way right now, you know. It's like, okay, we're here right now. What are we going to do with this moment? Is it going to liberate us or tie us up in knots? Let's go for liberation.
And on that note, I think it's time to wrap up the formal part of the call.
Can I hear everybody's voice one more time?
Yes, everybody. Make sure you're unmuted. And
I am just so touched that I thought it would be you and I, and so of course that would have been enough too, but I'm so touched that people tuned in. I'm really, really over the moon delighted.
Yes, so am I. Perhaps we could all say, may all beings be well together, and then I'll stop the recording. And if anybody wants to stay on and chat, you certainly may. I'd also like to let you know that we have one more scheduled interview in this series. It'll be Monday, the 27th of August, with Radha Tereska-Bucco, and she'll be talking about mentoring and the art of feedback, not just in a dance mentoring situation, but in your whole life.
Great.
So, if we're all ready,
May all beings be happy, peace.
And may all the good generated from this communion and conversation be of benefit to all. Thank you for being here.
Amen.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Anahata.
Mahalo.
Thank you, Sky.
Thank you, Anahata.